Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we have our first round of spring games of 2025 to discuss, and I'll be providing any kind of takeaways that we can get from them. After that, I reached out to you all wondering what's been on your mind regarding CFF 2025, and I'll be answering five of your fan-submitted questions in the second half of today's show. I have all of that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off-season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there to any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College GFS, Underdog Best Ball. If you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, you can make sure you, when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, you use that promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off of your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. And on the podcast side of things, you can leave us a 5-star review, make sure you follow the show, all that great jazz. Not only does that show us support, but you can also show the game of college fantasy football in general some support when you guys do that. If you have any further questions or just want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and we are once again riding a little solo here this week. Again, been a crazy last couple of weeks, y'all, so haven't had the time to really get guests lined up, so I hope you are okay with just little old me this week. I promise, as spring games really get kicked up here over the next couple of weeks, we'll absolutely have some guests back on. But with that being said, we've got quite a bit to cover here, and we really have a couple of big ticket items. We have one major injury, one entry to the portal that we have to discuss here. We have a couple of spring games here, very much the appetizers of spring games. We had two Power 4 teams that got their spring games going yesterday, several G5 teams. Good luck on finding information on some of these teams that played yesterday. And then, like I mentioned in the intro, I reached out to you guys. And because I knew today was going to be relatively light in terms of news, in terms of, you know, the spring games and stuff like that, I wanted to just know what you guys had on your mind. So we had five great questions that I picked out from all of you guys. Thank you to all of you guys who did submit questions. Again, unfortunately, we only have time for roughly five of those questions. So if you submitted a question and it didn't get put on the show, I promise you, it's not that I'm not trying to hurt feelings over here. Just unfortunately, I didn't have time to answer all of those questions because you guys know me. I love answering your questions as best I can. So that being said, let's go ahead and talk about some of these kind of big ticket nudist items here. We'll go ahead and get the injury out of the way, and that is Jeremiah Love, a, you know, perennial first round, maybe early second round running back, depending on which draft you are in. Went down with a hamstring injury during this last week's scrimmage, open practice. I just know that beat reporters are able to capture pretty much everything there. It sounds like it was decently serious hamstring injury, which is very unfortunate because those tend to be ones that don't really go away very easily. So I'm kind of concerned as to how this impacts him going into the season. But what we do know is that it sounds like he is just done for the spring. And why wouldn't he be, right? Like, if you got a star player who gets injured this late in the spring, there's no reason to rush him back out there or anything like that. Even if it was a minor tweak, if I were Notre Dame, I'd be sitting him on the sideline as best I can. Again, we'll see how this impacts him going forward. There's been no official diagnosis or anything here. Again, I'm not expecting anything serious, like, you know, an ACL tear or something like that, right? But just something to keep an eye on. It might bump him down in ADP just a little bit. Again, I got it pulled up here now. He's currently RB7 in ADP, currently going as about the 11th player off the board usually. So like I said, that late first round, early second round. Maybe that bumps him down, but again, like, just because of how crazy running back gets this year, I still feel like people are going to take him in that range even with this injury news. So I'm not super, super worried about that whatsoever. The other player that we have to discuss, another player that is going early on in drafts, is Emmett Moseley, currently the wide receiver 7 in ADP. He is currently being taken around the 302 pick, and he obviously drove a lot of buzz this past week. This was kind of the bomb that we've been waiting to drop ever since Troy Taylor had been fired from Stanford. I was kind of hoping that maybe Frank Wright comes in, maybe he convinces Emmett Moseley to stick around. Obviously, it does not appear that is going to be the case, given the fact that Emmett Moseley is now in the portal. So that kind of begs the question, right? This is a guy that a lot of people have been taking very, very high, and this could, in my opinion, either be very, very good for those people or it could be very, very bad, right? The main candidates here, and again, shout out to Nate for making me aware of this, Nate Marquise making me aware of this, but I would say he thinks the main candidates here are either Notre Dame, which is where Emmett Moseley's parents went to school, or to USC, where his brother is currently enrolled, right? I think there is very much a case for him to go to either one. Obviously, from a CFF perspective, him going to Notre Dame would be disastrous for the people who are been there, as we'll kind of talk about later. I think you're already kind of stretching to think that there's going to be a wide receiver that's worth taking for CFF there to begin with. If Moseley goes there, that just muddies the waters even further, and I don't think really any of them will be valuable at that point. USC's not great either, though, because, again, Mekhi Lemon and Jacoby Lane have pretty much locked down those two top spots, and I have no doubt that Emmett Moseley is talented enough to get in there and make that starting lineup, but then we would just kind of go back to the Lincoln Riley wide receiver split rotation that we've got over the last couple of years, where there hasn't really been that top, truly CFF-relevant guy really since the days of, you know, CeeDee Lamb and Hollywood Brown. You can make an argument that, oh my gosh, what's his name? The former Pitt wide receiver that went to USC for a year. Why am I blanking on this dude's name all of a sudden? I just had it on my head. I can feel you all screaming at me. What is this guy's name? Good Lord. Maybe I'll just cut this part out later here. Where is it? We're going to go back to 2022, was it? Jordan Addison. Good Lord. Why did that take so dang long? Yeah, I knew it. I had it in my head. I'm like, Vikings, Vikings, Vikings. Yeah, so like Addison was kind of the closest thing we got, really. And he only played a couple games short of a true regular season there. So maybe we get something like that. But even still, like, Emmett Moseley's got to beat up Mekhi Lemon and Jacoby Lane there. And those are two guys that are obviously very talented. So I'm not so sure he can do that. One school that I think is very much in the mix here, and I do think that at least to me, if this school doesn't get involved, I think that they're committing malpractice, and that is Miami. I've sung the praises of CJ Daniels. I think he's a great value in drafts right now. I bumped him down a little bit in my rankings a little bit. I discussed this on Purple Rain's podcast, how I bumped CJ Daniels down just a little bit. I think I had his volume, projected volume, up too high, in my opinion. So that kind of bumped him down to like the wide receiver 30 range, but still very much a guy that I'm taking in drafts, considering that he is, you know, going off the board at like wide receiver 60 in on average. But I think Miami has to take a gander here at Emmett Moseley. They need a slot guy. CJ Daniels can kind of play a balanced role, and that obviously would help him a ton in terms of being a CFF relevant guy. But Moseley is a certified demon in the slot, and I think Miami would be very smart to go and grab him there, considering that currently their other major slot option is Ray Joseph, who I don't think is a very good wide receiver at all. I think if they went and grabbed a guy like Mosley, this would allow them to put their three best receivers on the field with JoJo Trader, CJ Daniels on the outside, and then you put Mosley in the slot there. Again, I could be wrong, but I think Miami should and will be involved in this portal here with Emmett Mosley. So we'll see what happens there. I think if Mosley goes to Miami, everybody who's drafted him so far would see potentially not only his value retained, it probably would increase his value. I might bump Emmett Mosley up a little bit if he were to end up going to Miami, because currently I have Emmett Mosley when he was at Stanford. He's at wide receiver 16 for me. I'd probably bump him up. Good Lord. Probably in the top 12 pretty easily, I would say, considering he'd be replacing the Xavier Restrepo role. He'd have Carson Beck throwing to him. I think he'd be extremely valuable if he went to Miami, but we'll see where it ends up going. Fingers crossed, though. All right, let's go ahead and move on to some of these spring game recaps here. Let's talk about Clemson, one of the first two Power Four teams that had their spring game this weekend. I've always kind of noticed that Clemson has theirs just a little bit earlier than everybody else, but, you know, that kind of makes sense, right? What am I even saying? I'm just filling words here at this point. That makes no sense at all. They just happen to have it a week before a lot of major teams start kind of getting theirs in. But it does kind of give them quite a bit of a little spotlight for this weekend. But unfortunately, just like everybody, it seems like, good Lord, Clemson did not air their spring game, which is mini rant time. Congratulations to each and every one of the hyper paranoid coaches out there who are so concerned that, God forbid, a single thing gets out of practice, right? God forbid your fans know a single thing about what might be going on with your school. And I say this every team, including my own Georgia Bulldogs, that are taking their spring games off the air. You are denying your fans an opportunity to engage with your team, right? And you're taking that away all because you're hyper paranoid that, God forbid, somebody might reach out to a player that looked good in the spring game. Spoiler alert, those players are getting reached out to regardless, right? There are people at your practices that are spreading that information already, whether you guys like it or not, right? Some of you have canceled your spring games just altogether because you're just so paranoid. It's so annoying. This is literally one of the most annoying developments in any of the NIL era. This spring has been nuts for all of us who have been trying to provide content for all of you guys out there. Like, I'm sure a lot of you that have done your own research have kind of run into this, where it feels like harder than ever to just get anything out of beat reporters, out of any kind of practice news. I felt like last year I was getting scrimmage reports every other week. Now, like, we're already at spring games, and I'm sitting here like, I think the only real scrimmage that I've gotten detailed reports of has come out of Notre Dame. Again, we'll talk about them later, but, like, maybe I'm not looking hard enough. I don't know, but it's just been driving me nuts this year that, like, even the spring game recaps I'm about to bring you guys, there's just not much to bring you guys because, again, they don't want anything real getting out there. So, rant over, but it is just insane trying to find good information right now because all these coaches are just so paranoid that they think any kind of information getting out is a bad thing for their team. Again, spoiler alert, that's not going to affect you when you're playing on Saturdays. When the pads come on, all that stuff goes out the window. You guys will be fine. Anyway, back to Clemson here. As I just ranted on, there's not much to really glean from here, but granted, again, that's just spring games in general sometimes, right? Where whether it's the format, whether it's just the guys that are involved and everything like that, you don't really... You want to be careful gleaming too much from any of this, right? Because if you just went on this spring game for Clemson, you would think that Southeast Missouri wide receiver transfer Tristan Smith would be the wide receiver one for Clemson going into the season, given the fact that he had 5 catches for 137 yards and a touchdown in the day. Clearly, that's not going to be the case. They have a ton of talented wide receivers there with Antonio Williams, Bryant Wesco, TJ Moore, all of whom suspiciously absent from these spring reports because, again, God forbid any of those guys get talked about. The other thing to really kind of confirm here, this is something we talked about last week. It is good to see this confirmed in the this scrimmage. And that is Adam Randall did take first team reps at running back. And not only did he take first team reps at running back, but we also got to see David Ezeomume and Gideon Davidson do pretty well with their respective teams. Although I think it should be noted that Gideon Davidson was running with the threes, which again, I don't know where I think it's 247 beat report. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's like convinced that Davidson would end up becoming the RB1 for Clemson this year. But that's just so against a lot of what Dabo's done over the years, where he's not really one to trust true freshmen like that, right? Even Trevor Lawrence, it took a little bit for him to actually put him out there. And Trevor Lawrence was a generational talent, right? Davidson is not a generational talent by any stretch of the imagination. He's a good running back, don't get me wrong, but nothing I've really seen about him makes me say, this dude's got to get on the field for Clemson immediately. Especially when it sounds like Adam Randall has been doing pretty well for himself. So, yeah, I think Adam Randall officially now has to be moving up your rankings. I have him currently, where is he at in my rankings for wide receiver? Because, again, he's still got the wide receiver designation. Where are you? Can't find you now all of a sudden. Maybe I just can't read anymore. Come on. Control F. Randall. There he is. He's currently wide receiver 40 for me. I think that could end up moving up. Because again, that potential cheat code nature, we know how productive the Clemson running back can be when they get going. So yeah, absolutely should be somebody that's moving up your rankings, both at the wide receiver and running back position there. Let's move on over to the other Power Four spring game that occurred this weekend. That is West Virginia. Probably the two big questions coming into this weekend were, one, the quarterback battle between Nico Marquial and Jalen Henderson, and it does look like those are the two guys battling it out for the first team. Max Brown has fallen behind in this competition, it seems like. And then the other question is, what's going on with Jaheim White? For those that don't know, there have been some rumors kind of speculating. One, Jaheim White is injured. He did not participate in this spring game. He has been out for a little bit. And the speculation is that he could be a potential transfer portal candidate coming out of the spring, which feels crazy considering how productive Rich Rodriguez running backs have been in the past. But we all know how the portal era happens nowadays. The rumor is that maybe Texas is involved here. Again, I'm not going to confirm that or anything like that, but just something to keep an eye out for and something to definitely monitor as you're drafting Jaheim White in that 1-2 turn in drafts right now. I've seen Jaheim White go as high as the 1-3 pick. Like, y'all probably need to calm down on that. And that's somebody who has drafted Jaheim White so far this year, right? But there is a legitimate chance that he could be elsewhere by the time the spring is over. But anyway, let's talk about the quarterback battle here. As I mentioned, both Nico Marquial and Jalen Henderson did take first-team reps during this spring battle here. Both of them had black jerseys on, so they weren't completely live. That tells me this coaching staff is protecting both of them. You know, they feel like they're going to need both of them to be healthy. And so that, again, tells me as of right now, the staff still views this as a battle. But some of the reactions coming out of this definitely speak to me that, based on people watching the actual event, obviously, again, just like every other team, like West Virginia did not air their spring game, and so we have to rely on social media reports here, and we got one from the Voice of Morgantown who said, quote, "Every other media outlet tried to convince you that there would be a quarterback controversy this season, but there's clearly not. Nico Marquial has always been the guy." Another reaction from The Collective, which is the 247 account for West Virginia, they said, quote, "Biggest takeaway from the spring showcase, Nico Marquial looked very comfortable in the Rich Rod offense, even with a very mediocre offensive line protecting him throughout the day." So that tells me that I should be moving up Nico Marquial in my rankings. I currently have him, let's see, before I had him, where are you, Nico? All right, QB 34, given how productive the Rich Rod quarterback system has been in the past, I think I definitely have to move him up. It's kind of hard though, because again, again, there's so many great quarterbacks this year. I want to put him right in the, I'd say, God, this is hard because like I already had him pretty high up here. Definitely above Sam Levitt. Definitely above Tucker Gleason, I would say. Thomas Castellanos, definitely above him. Eli Holstein, I put him above because of injury. Reese Poffenbarger, I'm going to go with Nico just because, again, I think they can utilize his dual threat a little bit more there. Austin Simmons at Ole Miss, I think Nico will go above him. Zevi Ekhouse, I think he'll go above him as well. Diego Pavia above him. Gio Lopez, I'd probably put him above him as well. Marcel Reed, yes. Brendan Sorsby. Matthew Sluka, yeah. All right, I think Nico's going to settle in right at QB 22 for me. Sorry to annoy or bore you guys with me just kind of going through my rankings there, but I think I'll be moving up Nico up to 22, right ahead of right behind Kevin Jennings and right ahead of Brendan Sorsby. I think that's where he's settling in right about now. Again, there's just so many great guys ahead of him. And now I'm looking at it. I got Bryson Barnes at 10, so like why wouldn't I put Nico Marquial higher up like that? Because again, it's a guy being a good, well, we've seen more out of Barnes than we've seen of Marquial, so I think I'm gonna keep Marquial behind him for a little bit there. So that's a ranking that's definitely gonna be in flux there. I'm sorry if that was kind of me rambling a little bit there, but again, I'm moving Marquial up in my rankings because of this. I think he will end up being your starter here. A couple of other things to kind of take away here. One, we did get a little bit of mention from Spencer Ripchek from the Dominion Post regarding Jakeem White. He mentioned that Jakeem White was dressed and warmed up with the rest of the team. He suffered an injury in the spring and is still recovering. He didn't come in during the scrimmage and stayed put on the sidelines with his helmet off. With White out, Ripchek did notice that the bulk of the carries was redshirt freshman Dior Hubbard. Hubbard caught some passes out of the backfield, has some swift runs up the middle, quote. And he also mentioned that Trayvon Dunbar and Ty Edwards, the Northern Iowa and UTSA transfer, saw some action. And I was initially was kind of intrigued by Hubbard. I'm like, okay, maybe Hubbard's going to be something. But based on word we got out of Kevin Redfern, who was also there, he was saying that running with the ones was clearly Ty Edwards. So again, going back to this rumor about Jakeem White transferring, I don't think it's necessarily the worst idea in the world to take a shot on Edwards at the end of drafts right now. Or at the very least, if you're drafting Jakeem White super high, you absolutely need to be grabbing Ty Edwards as a handcuff right now, just in case that transfer does go down. Right. So we'll see. Again, I haven't heard great things out of Edwards this spring. Again, whatever limited information that we are able to get. So I don't think he'll be as good as Jakeem White. So like, let's say Jakeem White transfers out, right? And Edwards is now the guy. I'm not going to take Edwards and just slot him in where I had Jakeem White. That I don't think would work really well at all. I think that Edwards would probably end up somewhere around, I'd say like RB30-ish, right? Where I put him with like some guys that I like the system. I like where I like it, but, or like I like the system. I kind of like the players, but there's a major question mark. So around guys like Le'Veon Moss, Sire Gaines, Ahmad Hardy, people like that, right? Like that's where I would probably end up putting Ty Edwards if the Jakeem White rumors ended up becoming true there. So we shall definitely see. For those of you that are interested at all in the wide receivers, it looks like Cam Vaughn, the Jacksonville State wide receiver who came along with Rich Rod here, he caught a 50-yard bomb. It seemed like that he was one of the more impressive wide receivers on the day. Rodney Gallagher was also good for a couple of receptions. And so, again, I don't think there's really much to take away for the wide receivers. We're not exactly looking at Rich Rod wide receivers anyway, so we'll see. All right, moving on from West Virginia, let's go take a look at Fresno State here. Again, not much at all really to take away from here. One thing that stood out to me, though, one, shout out to Jackson Moore, who is doing a better job than most of these beat reporters for 247 or anybody else. One, I think Jackson Moore is doing like three different teams for 247, so dude's just an animal when it comes to providing content. But also, two, like he's providing really good information here. Couple of things that stood out here. One, quarterback, it does not seem, has been determined here in the spring. In my opinion, that's bad news for EJ Warner, but I don't think anybody's really drafting EJ Warner regardless, so it's not like anybody's being hurt by that. It's still a three-way battle between EJ Warner, Joshua Wood, and Mandel. I'm personally, as I mentioned before, kind of rooting for Wood here. I think he's got dual threat abilities. I think that he could really work really well in this Matt Entz offense, or with a Matt Entz team and a, oh my goodness, I can't remember the offensive coordinator's name. Is it Josh Davis? Let me see. Fresno State offensive coordinator. Yeah, it is Josh Davis. Ooh, woo, look at me. Look at random access memory coming in clutch there. I think Wood would fit better in this Josh Davis offense coming over from South Dakota here. So another thing here, more Bryson Donaldson hype kind of coming here. Matt Entz was asked to name several players who stood out during spring practices. The only offensive player that he named was Bryson Donaldson. He also mentioned a offensive lineman, but among the skill players, like, Bryson Donaldson was the only offensive player named by Entz. Jackson Moore, in his report prior to the spring game, just talked about practice in general. Somebody asked him, similar to the NFL label, who would you consider the franchise player on offense for this year's team? And Jackson Moore straight up said, expecting Bryson Donaldson to be the franchise player on offense. They should be able to run it a lot, and you should see a lot of touches. It may be more of a two-head approach than what fans might have expected, given the way that last year ended, which I think is important context, right? Elijah Gillum is absolutely there. And so, but he said that Donaldson should still be the focal point. I will also mention that, again, in this kind of Q&A session that Jackson Moore was providing for Fresno State, there was a lot of interest in true freshman Brandon Ramirez. So, Dynasty folks out there, maybe a stash for the future. Maybe I bring him up on Nate and I's podcast later this month when we discuss freshmen. For those of you that might be wondering about wide receivers, one, I would say don't, because I don't like wide receivers in either of Josh Davis or Matt Entz's history here. But they specifically called out Jayon Farr and Josiah Freeman as looking good, but didn't really go beyond that. Matt Entz specifically said that he wanted to see more out of that group, so that tells me that nobody's really standing out there. So, last spring game that we'll go real in-depth on here. Again, we'll kind of rapid-fire the rest of them here. But I do want to talk about Georgia Southern. One, because this is a team that we haven't really had a chance to discuss a lot of this season. And one of the questions that actually got asked by you guys, specifically coming from Volume Pigs, he was asking about an overrated offensive system in college fantasy football. And I almost put that one in. I was going to answer Georgia Southern. Because, you know, the last couple of years have just not been great. And I was going to point out just how, like, yeah, it seems like a high volume system, but they haven't really provided us what we need in order to be, you know, top end CFF options. But I decided against that question and moved on to another one. But I guess that's me semi answering it here, saying that Georgia Southern's offense has not really been great the last couple of years. Like, yes, we've had some really high target guys, right? Like, Caleb Hood had 123 targets. Durbin Burgess had 95 targets last year, but you would never have really known it, considering just how inefficient this offense has become, right? Let's talk about, like, what is here now, though. Obviously, J.C. French is coming back. He seems to be a big fan of Auburn transfer wide receiver Camden Brown. Maybe that ends up being something. I'm not entirely sure. I've thought about drafting Dalen Cobb and Josh Dallas just in case maybe they take a big step this year, but their less than stellar stat lines the last couple of years have kind of warded me off of them. Maybe Camden Brown can kind of break that. But even still, right, I'm just personally concerned that so long as French specifically is the starting quarterback, this offense is just held back completely, right? French threw 377 times last year compared to 514 times for Davis Brin and 559 times for Kyle Van Trees. One, Davis Brin and Kyle Van Trees are not great quarterbacks. Right, let's be very clear about that. They're not great quarterbacks, and this staff still trusted those guys to throw over 500 times, and French could not even get to 400 times. Maybe that changes this year with a year of starting under his belt. Maybe they trust French a bit more to throw the ball, but even still, there's a huge difference between how much this staff trusts French to run the system compared to even guys like Brin and Van Trees the last couple of years. This is an air raid system. Considering they're letting their quarterback throw less than 400 times, I think that says a lot about what they think the ceiling of this offense can be under French. And quite frankly, I don't think there's really anything to take away, even though, again, based on the spring game, Camden Brown looked pretty good, and J.C. French seemed to be a huge fan of him. I'm still not sure I can quite get there on there. Maybe I probably will replace Dalen Cobb, who is in my rankings, with Camden Brown, but I'm not moving them up very far, even though this is an air raid system that theoretically there should be a ton of volume here to go around, but I'm not trusting too much out of Georgia Southern. Other spring camps that kind of happened this weekend in the G5, as I mentioned, every one of these coaches is just being hyper paranoid, and so many of them some of them just don't have reporters to really give much information, like UL Monroe and stuff like that. Like, I understand, but Coastal Carolina specifically, I know for a fact that Jason Beck is like hyper paranoid about any of his players being taken. So there's just nothing on social media, nothing in terms of the news sites that are coming out and everything. I doubt that anything really comes out until after the spring portal window, because, you know, why do something fun like that? So yeah, we got nothing on Coastal Carolina, nothing on UL Monroe. We got a little bit on FIU. There's some talk about Eric Nelson kind of showing some solid chemistry with Keon Jenkins. I'm personally not super excited about that, because Nelson didn't play at all last year as a true freshman. So I don't think he's really making that big of a leap going from a guy that couldn't even get on the field last year to suddenly now he's Keon Jenkins' top wide receiver and he's going to replace Eric Rivers or Dean Patterson. I'm not quite buying that. And then the other takeaway I had was Alex Perry was talked about in the article regarding FIU's spring game, but they said that he was making plays and had nice chemistry with Clayton Dees, who is the backup quarterback, and that tells me that Perry was running with the second stringers, so now I'm concerned that, you know, Dees doesn't even have, or that Perry might not even be running with the starters anymore. So, and then the last spring game that we'll kind of discuss here is Missouri State. The beat reporters were very clear about the fact that the weather made this game hard to evaluate, but again, they were still able to come away with a lot of takeaways, so good on them for providing way more coverage than most of these G5 teams, so salute to you guys. Kind of some of the main takeaways here. The big one that I would say is the emergence of James Blackstrain as the emerging top target here. This was something that the beat reporters were talking about before the spring game, and they wanted to see it confirmed, and it looks like that has been confirmed, that Blackstrain is currently the top target for this team. And I kind of asked myself, like, how much does that really matter, right? Hunter Wood was the leading wide receiver for Missouri State last year. He saw 87 targets for 63 receptions, 799 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Obviously, we don't love the 3 touchdowns, but 63 for almost 800, you know, it's not great, don't get me wrong, but it's not bad, right? And it's clear that he was a cut above the rest of that receiving room in terms of how many targets he was getting. So this is a system that does tend to target one guy. So, but then I looked 2 seasons ago, and then Raylan Sharp, who some of you guys might be familiar with, one now at Arkansas, but then before that Fresno State, Raylan Sharp with Missouri State had 100 targets for 73 receptions, 986 yards, and 7 touchdowns. Now we're getting somewhere. That's something, that's a stat line that we're more okay with. And if Blackstrain can kind of get to that point, I think he's absolutely worth a shot in the last few rounds. In fact, as it's coming up here for me to finish this best ball draft that I'm in right now, I'm going to probably take Blackstrain with my final pick. I'm deciding between him and another wide receiver that I will be discussing here later. It should be noted, though, that the beat reporters for Missouri State did specifically say that Missouri State would probably add some wide receivers in the portal during spring. Given the way they were talking about Blackstrain, though, I don't think that they're saying that that's somebody that's going to replace Blackstrain as the top target. It's probably guys that'll help supplement him. A quick note here on the running back situation here at Missouri State. They noted that King Davis, who's a true freshman back, did not participate. He was actually, the hype around him for this team is actually pretty impressive. He was expected to split carries with FBS veteran Shamari Lawrence. But without Davis, it looks like Lawrence is the clear top back. And if there's some issues there with Davis's injury, might be worth taking a shot on Lawrence later on in drafts. I know I just did in my latest best ball. I took a shot on Lawrence as a late running back option because, as I've mentioned before, running back gets super weird. And, you know, if you look at Missouri State the last couple of years, let me see if I can find them real quick. Oh my gosh, come on. I should have wrote this down. I'm failing you guys. There we go. Oh my God, I can't type. There we go. Missouri State Bears. We'll look at their rushing last year. So like Jakardi White 2 seasons ago, not great. 150 attempts, you know, just under 700 yards, 6 touchdowns. That's fine. But last year, Jakardi White got 184 attempts, 872 yards, 14 touchdowns. If Lawrence can repeat that this year, that's more than good enough for, you know, a round 26 to 30 round pick right there. So we'll see. We'll see. That's enough of the spring games there. Again, not a ton of takeaways, but just something to kind of keep an eye on for each of those teams there. Let's get to some of these listener questions here, and we'll start off with Chris K, our buddy Chris K over here at Campus Kent, and he left me a good question that I thought was kind of interesting because at first I was like, man, I don't know how I'm going to answer this question. And then I kind of just started spewing answer after answer. So Chris asked for one guy here. I actually have like, let's see, 1, 2, 3. I got 4 guys that I'll talk about here for you, Chris. And then once again, before I get too far into this, I do appreciate each and every one of you that did submit a question. I'm sorry that I could not get to all of them here on the show. Y'all asked a ton of great questions. If I can and have some time this week, I will try to go back and answer on Twitter some of those questions. If you guys like this, maybe I will try to get like a listener question at the end of every show moving forward. But we shall see. Anyway, Chris K's question here. He says, quote, give us a running back battle that nobody is talking about. Essentially, we all assume XYZ will be the RB1, but you actually think there's another name that has a great shot at taking the job. So my initial thought for this was going to be the Texas Tech running back room where, you know, Quentin Joyner is being drafted as a top 12 running back in like the second round. I like Joyner. I think he'll be the RB1. I think that's a very dangerous pick right now. But for K specifically, I think that'd be a pretty boring answer considering that K has had that running back situation clocked for months now. So I'm going to give you something different here, K. This first one is, I would say, not a running back. Again, here I go. This doesn't fully answer your question because this is definitely not a running back room that nobody's talking about. But it is, I'm taking this question as an opportunity to address this. I want to talk about the Texas running back room real quick. I didn't really realize until now that Cedric Baxter is still being taken in like the 4th, 5th rounds of drafts. Like, I get that running back becomes a minefield very quickly after, you know, your top 7, 8 guys. But right now, Baxter in that range is a very dangerous pick to make. Like, this is a dude coming off an ACL injury. He's up to 230 pounds. So he's put on weight since last season. Trey Wisner looked really solid last season. I don't think we needed to dismiss him at all. And right now, the way they're talking about Baxter is, quote from Sarkisian, could be ready as soon as the season opener versus Ohio State. So we have no guarantee that he will even play 12 games this season, let alone come into fall, retake the RB1 spot from a guy like Trey Wisner, who performed pretty well last year. I'm just saying that Baxter going in the fourth, fifth round is dangerous. Meanwhile, Wisner's going 4 rounds later. We need to chill badly on Baxter. I'm not saying Wisner needs to move up, but Baxter absolutely should not be going 4 rounds ahead of him. But anyway, okay, that doesn't really answer your question. Here's a couple. I got a couple of max situations here that I think more answers your question, okay? One max situation that I think we assume we know who the RB1 is, but there's a legitimate chance of another guy taking the job, or we need to consider the possibility of another guy taking the job, and that is Ohio, which is crazy because I love Sia Bangura and everything, but we need to keep an eye on that situation. I know narratively everything seems perfect, right? Ohio loses their head coach, they lose their best options at running back to the draft and to the portal. The staff that is still there, has been elevated from that old staff, so you assume the system will be the same, and that Bangura will just come in, slide on into a very empty running back room, and it'll be the main guy. But that's all that it is so far. It's just narrative. We have literally zero, zilch, nada to go on from actual spring practices. Again, granted, this is a G5 MAC team. There's not a ton of coverage around these guys regardless, but we've been down this road before. We've thought Ricky Hunt was the main guy for Ohio all of last year until Anthony Tyus came in and became the main guy. Admittedly, as I kind of mentioned, it's a very barren running back room here, right? I don't know who else Ohio could really go with right now, as Bruin and McCormick are their only two other options, and neither one's status is really known right now, considering they missed a good chunk of last year, and neither one of them were really impressive in their limited runs last year. So what I am saying is, given the fact that Siya Bangura is being drafted pretty high right now, where's Bangura going right now? He is... he's going pretty high last time I saw. There he is, RB30 in, you know, the sixth round. Like, that's a pretty high price to pay for a guy. Now, granted, again, the situation seems very good right now, but I would not doubt if Ohio added a running back from the portal this spring camp. Another MAC situation I think we have to keep an eye on is Western Michigan. I know the situation looks nice over there, right? Like, Jalen Buckley was splitting the reps with Nixon last year. Nixon is gone. Buckley has kind of been the main guy at Western Michigan before. He should go right back to that. But my gut feel is to say, watch the transfer of Cole Cabana coming into Western Michigan here, right? Buckley already got outshined by a Power 4 transfer once, in my opinion, a very unimpressive one, given what Nixon did at Oklahoma State. Who is to say that he won't be again here, right? Buckley's RB27 price, in my opinion, is pretty concerning right now. Like, that's a steep price to pay for a guy that we're just assuming is the RB1 now, Western Michigan. And even then, maybe he's 1A to Cabana's 1B, but that's still not really enough to justify the price that he's going at right now, because I think Buckley, what did Buckley finish as last year? Buckley finished as RB99 last year. Good lord. Not great at all. What did he finish in fantasy points per game? Okay, RB58. So he missed a few games. So, like, but still, top 60 running back at best. I'd say watch out for that one. And then the last one here, I don't really have much analysis here, but again, a lot of people taking Cam Cook. This is a bit of a deeper option here, right? Because Cam Cook's what? Going... What is Cook going? He's going RB61 right now in draft. So, like, you're not paying super high for him. You know, you're seeing him go off in like the 13th round of drafts right now, so you're not paying a super high price for him. But I'm shocked at the number of people that have just completely dismissed the idea that Andrew Paul can't be the RB1 for Jacksonville State, considering that he was there with this staff last year. So okay, I hope that answered your question. I gave you four different rooms. I hope one of them kind of scratched your itch on this question. Let's move on to our next question here that comes from Mitch Hart. And he says, who are three big fish, small pond guys at each position you like to outperform their ADP this year? For those of you who don't know, big fish, small pond was a phrase coined by Mitch Hart here. It basically describes the guys like former blue chip prospects that, you know, started off going off to a big name school, or maybe they just went straight to a small school, and their talent level is just higher compared to everybody else on the roster that they're currently on. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And so, Mitch, I'll give you a couple of guys here right now. I talked about it a little bit early on in the show. I am keeping an eye on Camden Brown there at Georgia Southern, even though I don't really like the system as much as I did in years past. I think that there's a possibility for a big fish, small pond situation there. I talked about it last week that Rah-Rah Thomas going to Troy and filling in the shoes of Devontae Ross could end up being a huge big fish, small pond scenario right there. I just grabbed Rah-Rah Thomas in a draft recently. I'll probably be more aggressive on that depending on how people go. That's a couple of wide receivers. I'll throw one more wide receiver here for you, Mitch. And this is, again, a system I do not like. But Sheldon Sampson, former four-star wide receiver going to University of Louisiana Lafayette there, that one might be kind of interesting, right? Again, this is a system we do not love for CFF, like, at all. But Samson's reuniting with Walker Howard, who's a former five-star product, right? They both knew each other from their time at LSU. They're, again, both coming down to the Sun Belt here. I would assume that they're playing, or they're playing at a level that's below their talent level. So even though I don't love this system, I think there's a chance here that their talent level should elevate them above the system, and maybe, just maybe, that forces them to feed Samson there at Louisiana. Again, we're talking about a last round guy in drafts there. And then at running back, I just mentioned Cole Cabana at Western Michigan. I think that's something to keep an eye out for. And then another one is Rashad Dubinion going from Appalachian State to, or excuse me, going from Arkansas to App State, reuniting with his former tight ends coach from Arkansas, who was the offensive coordinator at South Carolina last year. Loganes is now the head coach there at App State. There's a connection there. Kondia Roberts is still kind of hanging around that, but other than him, that backfield is pretty wide open. So I think there's a possibility that Rashad Dubinion could end up being the RB1 for App State this year. What that ceiling is, I'm not entirely sure. I have no information really to back this up that Dubinion's even, you know, running with the first team. But much like Sia Bengara going to Ohio, like, I think it's something to look out for, right? I think Dubinion going to App State and becoming the RB1 does make some sense there, so definitely one to keep an eye on here. Oh, and then one last one I need to point out here is, as Josh Chevalier, the CFF analyst over at Fantasy Points, pointed out, UNLV is kind of a graveyard of former blue-chip wide receivers, right? And as I was kindly reminded on Twitter after making an ass of myself, there's a decent ceiling for Dan Mullen's wide receivers in some years. Like, take your pick among these former blue chip receivers and guys that we've liked in the past. Guys like Troy O'Meary, Dejon Reynolds, JoJo Earl, Coy Moore, like all former four-star wide receivers now hanging around with Dan Mullen here in Las Vegas. Mullen's high ceiling guys like Kadarius Toney and Fred Ross have mostly come from the slot in past years, which I say gives, you know, JoJo Earl and Coy Moore a leg up over the other two. Regardless, in order to achieve that ceiling, they're going to need to step up way above the rest of that room. And I'm not sure any of those guys do it, but considering every one of these guys is, you know, free 99 in drafts right now, grab them with your last couple round picks if you like the situation and just kind of roll with it. So Mitch, hope that answered your question. Let's move on over to JT's question here. JT Brew at JT Orange on Twitter. Let me take a sip of water real quick. And he's specifically curious about what's going on with San Diego State this year, right? Makes a lot of sense. This is still Sean Lewis's offense going on here in the Mountain West. If he gets the right pieces, everything says that he should be able to create a CFF relevant system here. Problem is, and I'm imagining this is why JT's asking this question, we've got like nothing to go on here, just like a lot of G5 schools right now. So let's start with the quarterback situation, because JT's asking who wins the starting quarterback job, who wins the running back job for the Aztecs. We'll start with quarterback here. Your two main guys here are Central Michigan transfer Burt Emanuel Jr. and then also Michigan transfer Jaden Denegal. Let's start with Burt Emanuel. Okay, we love the ceiling of Burt Emanuel, but dude can't throw a football to save his life. He just doesn't strike me as a guy who really fits well into Sean Lewis's system. Outside of the fact that he can run, he does typically like quarterbacks that can run, but I just don't really see it here. I think that Jaden Denegal, the former Michigan running or Michigan quarterback coming in here, I think he's more likely your answer at quarterback, considering, again, former blue chip. Not that we saw a ton of him at Michigan, and considering that he couldn't really beat out Alex Orji or any of those guys that played for Michigan last year, doesn't give me high hopes that he's a very good quarterback in general, but he fits the system a little bit more here, and he can run, so I think he's more likely your answer at quarterback here. Regardless, I'm not sure this system is better than last year. In fact, without Marcus Cooper, I think it absolutely could be worse than what it dealt with last year. Running back, this is kind of a, not a complicated question, but it's, or not a complicated question. How do I want to say this? I'm not sure how to exactly answer this because I think there's two aspects to this. One, I can tell you who I think is going to start at running back, and there are three main candidates. I'll get to them in a second, but I think it's also important to point out that I'm not entirely sure there's a system play here, right? When it comes to Sean Lewis, it's basically Marquez Cooper or nothing at the running back for Sean Lewis and his system. Like, if you take a look at his last 4 years where Sean Lewis didn't have Marquez Cooper as his main running back, they averaged for, based on 12 games, so again, a lot of these guys played less than 12 games, so I extrapolated their stats out to 12 games just to give a better comparison here. But over 12 games, they average 149 rush attempts, 660 yards, and 4.6 touchdowns. Not a stat line that we love at all. It seems like Lewis had just a very special connection with Marquez Cooper there, so I think it's dangerous to draft any of these guys expecting that you're going to get a Marquez Cooper top 20 running back season out of them. But let's say they do, right? Like, who am I targeting amongst these bunches here? The three main candidates, I think, are Coastal Carolina transfer Christian Washington, who looked pretty good last year. He had 102 attempts for 537 yards and 5 touchdowns. He looked like a guy that could handle a pretty solid workload at times for Coastal Carolina last year. The other guy to take a look at here is veteran of San Diego State program, and that is Cam Davis. My thing is that Cam Davis had a lot more volume under the previous regime, and then this past year just tanked down to only 14 carries for 76 yards. I'm kind of shocked that he didn't hightail it out of here during the transfer portal, along with, you know, Jalen Armstead. But I guess maybe he didn't really have anywhere else to go. But I don't think it's going to end up being him, considering just, again, how much he got neutered last year. And then here's the wild answer, and that is, what if we take Bert Emanuel and we do stick him at running back full time? He's been great as a rusher in the MAC, right? His first year, he was averaging over 7 yards per carry. He's since kind of come back on that a little bit, averaging just over 4.5 yards per carry. I think if you put him at running back full time, he can kind of get that efficiency back there. Just a fun idea, but given the fact that he's not given a running back eligibility designation right now, I don't think it's worth, you know, taking that shot or anything. So yeah, if I'm gonna take a guy in a draft, it's probably Christian Washington. I think I have taken him in like the last one or two rounds of drafts so far, but I think that you'll be playing a dangerous game if you're drafting any of these guys expecting Marquez Cooper levels. But at the same time, it's not like any of these guys are going super high in drafts, so YOLO, I guess. There you go. That's one for you millennials out there. Let's move on to our next question here, and I just realized that my face is covering the question a little bit, so my apologies to everybody. I'll make sure to read out this question in full. This one comes to us from our buddy Aiden Weingartner, which Aiden Weingartner is now working with the guys over at Fantasy and Frames. He's providing some NFL analysis for them, so go check out his work. But anyway, his question here, he's a big Notre Dame fan. He says, who do you think we see as Notre Dame's starting quarterback this year? I personally lean Angeli right now, but what do you think? Also, other than Jeremiah Love, do you think there will be any CFF viable assets in this fighting Irish offense this year? If so, who? So yeah, we'll start with the quarterback question here because that's kind of the main portion of this question. For those of you that haven't been keeping up, basically there are three main options for Notre Dame regarding this quarterback battle. There has been, you got Steve Angeli here, who's kind of been the longtime backup over the last 2 years for Notre Dame. You got Kenny Minchie, who is I forget what year he is, but he has been around for, this will be his third year, I believe. And then CJ Carr, who was a true freshman last year, a highly recruited quarterback in that room. He was redshirted last year, and he has a legitimate shot to win the job here as well. All three of these guys have a case. It sounds like Angeli, I'd say, probably has the slight lead right now, just given the fact that he's actually been out on the field. But my takeaway from all of this is that given that Angeli's has had 2 years in this system and still has not locked down this job, kind of tells me a lot of what to expect from Angeli, even if he does win the job. And it tells me how much this offensive staff views Njeli compared to these other two, right? Like, I feel like if Njeli's been the clear backup for the last 2 years and he's not coming into this offseason as the clear next guy up, he's not even battling transfers, right? It's one thing if it's like he's been the backup for the last 2 years and they bring in a transfer, right? And he has to beat out another guy with a ton of experience. He's having to compete with guys that have been on the bench at Notre Dame the last couple of years. So basically, I'm out on Njeli regardless. I know Greg McElroy said in one of his recent shows that like Njeli could have like a Joe Burrow-esque leap this year. I highly doubt that if he's not being able to push aside the likes of Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr, who are talented quarterbacks in their own right. Let me be very clear about that. I do think that part of it is that, you know, Minchie and Carr are legitimately good, and that's why they're pushing Njeli. But even still, like, I'm out on Njeli. The other part of this is that something that stood out to me in reports at Notre Dame practices recently is that the offensive line has been struggling to keep these quarterbacks clean in the backfield. And if that's the case, a guy like Njeli, who isn't very mobile at all compared to the likes of Minchie and Carr, he'll be a liability for this offense. And so I think that'll kind of ding him a little bit as well. I say all that knowing that we just haven't seen much out of Minchie or Carr. So I don't really have much to go on in terms of saying like, oh yeah, Minchie or Carr are definitively better. I think it says something that they're pushing Njeli for this job, if not even with him for this job. I've rambled on a long time, and Aiden, like, the answer is, yeah, I probably lean Njeli right now, but again, like I said, I don't think he's a CFF asset even if he wins the job. I'd much rather Minchie or Carr ended up taking this job. That way we can get a Riley Leonard-esque fantasy performance out of a Notre Dame quarterback like we saw last year, can take full advantage of that Mike Denbrock system there. I think, given some of the hype we've seen out of Minchie over the last couple of weeks, yeah, I'll go ahead and say it. I think Minchie's the Notre Dame quarterback by the time the fall rolls around. Am I drafting him because I'm super certain about that? Nope, not at all. The other part of your question here, Aiden, is do I think there will be any other CFF viable assets on this Fighting Irish offense this year? I do like this wide receiver room more than I did last year, right? Notre Dame loses Bo Collins, Chris Mitchell, Jaden Thomas, Jaden Harrison. In my opinion, those losses are just kind of trimming the fat. They keep, in my opinion, the two best wide receivers they had last year in Jaden Greathouse and Jordan Faison. They bring in Malachi Fields. They bring in Will Pauling. I like that set of four much better than what they had last year. And then if they bring in Emmett Moseley, that's a much better wide receiver room than what they had last year, in my opinion. But again, if they bring in Emmett Moseley, as I mentioned when we discussed him early on in the show, that muddies this water. I don't think anybody's really going to end up being the top wide receiver. If you go just by practice reports, though, especially by The Athletic, they think Greathouse is being, or far and away, the top wide receiver by a large margin. And if you look at just how things ended for Notre Dame last year, you can kind of see where that comes from, right? He had great games against two of the toughest defenses that Notre Dame faced last year in Penn State and Ohio State, where he pulled in a combined 14 targets for 13 receptions, 233 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He keeps that up. Yeah, absolutely. He is a CFF viable asset. The problem is he's had games of 17, 12, 6, 8, and 6 yards, all in games right before that stretch. So he can have really good games or he can have really, really bad games. So if you're going to put a gun to my head and say, all right, who's a wide receiver that you're taking a shot on here? I got to go with Greathouse. I do like Will Pauling. I like Malachi Fields, but I think Greathouse, given how last season ended, given the way they're talking about him in practice, at least the beat reporters are, I think he's the one to take a shot on. And he's the other wide receiver that I'm deciding between Blackstrain and him as to who I'm going to take here in the 30th round. Because Greathouse, I think, is an excellent grab in the 30th round. He's a highly efficient wide receiver. Let me see. Where do I have him in my rankings? Because I know I have him in my rankings. And where are you? Jaden Greathouse. I'm as wide receiver 62. And the thing that I kind of point out is that he's a very efficient receiver. Again, 14.3 yards per reception over his last 2 years. And if I remember correctly, he actually upped that efficiency in that second year, and he's being dragged down by that first year that he was there where he was in the slot. And so I think, yeah, I think Greathouse is worth checking out at the end of drafts, for sure. Let's take a look at our last question here that comes to us from Awood Sports, and he has three questions. I'm just going to go with one here, Awood. And he asks, do you think Nate Frazier ends up being a top 20 fantasy running back this year? Frazier's currently going as running back 19 in drafts, so clearly the CFF community thinks that he has a pretty solid chance of being a top 20 running back. I have him, and this is coming from a Georgia fan, I have him as RB43. If you look over the last couple of years, if Trevor Etienne played 12 games last year, he was on pace for RB46. Dejon Edwards, the year before that, did play all 12 games, and he finishes RB44. The year before that, Kenny McIntosh also finished as RB44. So, pretty clear, kind of scary consistency from the top running back for Georgia over the last couple of years, where they're not nobodies, right? This is Georgia. They're an offense that scores a lot of points. They beat down on a lot of guys. It leads to a lot of opportunity for rushing touchdowns, especially among their top backs. But their ceiling's pretty capped. Like, we haven't seen a Georgia running back really hit a, you know, true bell cow back really since 2019. I'll get to that here in a second. But why is this, right? This is because of conscious decision by Kirby and staff. We've seen split backfields a lot at Georgia over the last couple of years. Not only is this because this backfield is filled with blue chip guys, and so many of them are on the same level. There's not a lot of separation between the running backs, so they switch them out, keep them all healthy. But speaking of health, there's been a major health problem for UGA running backs over the last couple of years. If you look at last year, only one running back for Georgia played in all 12 games, and that was Cash Jones, who's not even really used as a traditional running back. He's more of a receiving threat, right? Even Nate Frazier, who we're talking about here, missed out on 2 games last year. Etienne missed out on 4. Georgia running backs just get hurt. Currently, Georgia's backfield includes 2 guys in Roderick Robinson and Branson Robinson. Both of them are very heavily injured right now. They are hella paranoid about any of their guys getting hurt, and so you're going to see continued rotation at that position. You'd have to go back to, like I said, Dejon Edwards back, or excuse me, Kenny McIntosh back in 2022 to find a starting running back for Georgia playing in all 12 regular season games. You'd have to go back to 2019 to find a running back that broke 1,000 yards and had over 200 touches, and that's my man DeAndre Swift. I don't have exactly what DeAndre Swift finished that year because my stats don't go back that far, but Swift scored 198.7 fantasy points that season. That would have gotten him to be RB34 last year, RB32 the year before, and then RB31 in 2022, right? To me, Swift had the ceiling of what you can expect out of a UGA running back, and that clearly still doesn't get you to RB20. And even to get to what Swift had, right, we'd need a lot to go right for Frazier to hit that level. One, as I mentioned before with the health, we'd need Frazier not to get hurt. That's not a given at all, especially since we've seen Frazier get hurt already in his first year. Two, we'd need Frazier to be a cut above everybody else in that running back room. My opinion, he is, so no problem there. Two, we need Frazier to be even more efficient than what he was last year. Last year, he was toting the rock at 4.8 yards per carry. In Swift's season that I just mentioned there in 2019, Swift was averaging 6.2 yards per carry. So you would need Frazier to be even more efficient. And then on top of everything else, this requires Mike Bobo being a competent play caller, which is by no means a given. On top of everything else, you also have Gunnar Stockton at quarterback, who is going to be running in a lot of these rushing touchdowns that would pretty much be reserved for the Georgia running backs, right? This isn't Jake Fromm in the backfield. This is not Carson Beck, right? So I think that Frazier, while a very good player, does not have the path to get to a top 20 running back, and so that's why I have him lower, probably than consensus, it seems like. So Alrighty, that's a lot of talking. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Again, news is a little slow thanks to the combined efforts of every head coach in America. It feels like right now there wasn't a ton of spring games this weekend. I appreciate all of you guys who submitted questions to kind of help fill out this show for this week. Again, if more of these kind of come up, I'll absolutely reach back out to you guys. But we have a ton of spring games coming up over the next couple of weeks. Next week, let's see what we got. April 11th, we got Army, we got Florida Atlantic, Louisville, Nevada, Kansas, Georgia State. Those would be fun ones to kind of keep an eye on there. And then on Saturday, LSU, Central Michigan, Ohio State, Purdue, Virginia, South Alabama, Alabama, Auburn, Ball State, Florida, Georgia, Pitt, Texas State, UTEP, Western Kentucky, James Madison. We got a boatload of these guys. Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. Good Lord, this list just keeps going on. Yeah, we got a long story short, we got a full show for you guys next week. Hopefully, because almost hardly none of these are being streamed online, hopefully we'll have some decent information for you guys coming from that. But with all that being said, appreciate all of you guys out there. We have come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening. If you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here on Monday, where we will cover all of those spring games I just mentioned. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.